This is Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Kanesh.
Puerto Rico has a poverty rate approaching 50% and a public debt that amounts to over $20,000 per inhabitant, more than its median income of $19,000. While most of the attention in Puerto Rico's case focuses on technical issues relating to the solvency of municipal bonds and austerity measures, the history of U.S. policies have resulted in more than 3.5 million Puerto Ricans being treated as second-class citizens. With a poverty rate of more than 45%, more than double that of our poorest state, Mississippi, Puerto Rico has the serious long-term economic problem like its current massive public debt. And they have been historically papered over.
Meanwhile, the hedge fund vultures and Wall Street banks and lawyers charging over $1.4 billion in a seven-year period for charges like swap termination fees are circling Puerto Rico. They are sensing a physical death spiral they can feed off and care little about the consequences for nearly 4 million residents as they manipulate a financial system largely devoid of any social conscience.
And indeed, while there has been a focus on the municipal bonds and austerity measures, really, the history of U.S. policies have resulted in more than 3.5 million Puerto Ricans being treated as second-class citizens. The bottom line is that Puerto Rico is the United States' largest colony that it decided to take by force 117 years ago and has since treated like a resented orphan. It has consistently undernourished politically and economically. Puerto Rico's current fiscal crisis is, in a sense, really a crisis of American colonial policies. And will the United States accept responsibility for the negative consequences of its imperialist past?
Professor Rafael Bernabe Refcol, candidate for governor of Puerto Rico, talks with us about this and approaches for the island's recovery and more long-term solutions for Puerto Rico's fiscal problems.
Thank you for having me.
Professor, would you agree that the U.S. Congress's role really underlies this fiscal crisis, that it turned Puerto Rico into a bond haven with the triple tax exempt bonds? And if you continue to colonize a territory of 3.5 million U.S. citizens who fight your wars, pay into federal programs, and is underfunded by billions of dollars, demands a non-territorial status, giving them sovereignty to control their economic and political destiny, and are ignored, the territory will not have any option but to minimize the gaps in services by continuing to borrow. In short, isn't it primarily the island's territorial status and Congress's underfunding and unequal treatment of Puerto Rico that has really conspired to create the debt crisis that exists today?
Yes. When people talk about the situation in Puerto Rico, they normally concentrate their attention on the debt issue. But behind the debt issue is the larger problem of the structure of Puerto Rico's economy. The Puerto Rican economy, ever since the early 1900s, since the establishment of U.S. rule in Puerto Rico, the Puerto Rican economy has been largely controlled by U.S. corporations. That was the case in the early 20th century when sugar was the main product, and it's still the situation today when certain industrial products are the main products of the island. But it is large U.S. corporations that control the Puerto Rican economy. One of the many consequences of that is that considerable profits are generated in Puerto Rico. You have sort of a paradox. You have a country which is highly indebted. It doesn't have any money for the government to function, but yet considerable profits are generated in Puerto Rico, and most of these profits are not reinvested in Puerto Rico. They leave the island every year. Economists calculate that U.S. corporations in Puerto Rico make about $35 billion in profits every year. That's about half of the total Puerto Rican debt in just one year. So you have an economy which doesn't work for the people who live in Puerto Rico, doesn't generate sufficient employment for the people in Puerto Rico, doesn't generate sufficient revenue for the government of Puerto Rico, but it does generate a considerable amount of profit for the U.S. corporations that operate in the island. So that helps you to partly explain why the government of Puerto Rico has borrowed an increasing amount of money in order to function. And as you mentioned, other policies established by Congress have stimulated that tendency. Bonds of the government of Puerto Rico are triply exempt. You don't have to pay municipal taxes, you don't have to pay state taxes, and you don't have to pay federal taxes on them. That makes them very attractive to investors. So it was relatively easy for a long period of time for the government of Puerto Rico to, instead of taxing corporations that operate in Puerto Rico, which is what it should have done, instead of taxing these profits that are generated in Puerto Rico and leave the island, to borrow more money. And needless to say, that has a limit, and the limit has been reached. So yes, there are many aspects of the way that Congress has organized or helped organize the Puerto Rican economy over the last century that lead to the present crisis. Right now, the most recent proposal that is being discussed in Congress, it's a proposal written by the Republican majority in Congress. It proposes to create an oversight board which would largely take over the government of Puerto Rico. It would decide what the budget of Puerto Rico is, what the main economic projects would be, and so on and so forth. So the present debt crisis is being used not to abolish or to diminish, but rather to assert colonial control over Puerto Rico in an even more direct way than it has been the case, you know, in the past few decades.
But even leaving aside that most odious part of the Republican proposal in Congress for this undemocratic, colonial-inspired oversight board, which would rob Puerto Ricans of any democratic control over their own economy, isn't this fixation on the debt itself something that takes our mind away from the real prize, which is how do we fix the economy of Puerto Rico?
Absolutely. There are two key issues here. One issue is a very immediate issue. It's the debt issue. The government of Puerto Rico right now is running out of money, literally speaking. Right now it has reached the point in which it either finances the services that the island needs or it pays the creditors. May 1, it has to pay about $400 million, and come July 1st, it has to pay $700 million, so that $1.1 billion. And the government simply doesn't have the money, or if it were to pay that, then it wouldn't have any money to function adequately. Unfortunately, the government of Puerto Rico should have understood this long ago and should have taken measures to prevent this situation from coming to this point. For example, last week, the government of Puerto Rico adopted a moratorium act which empowers the governor of Puerto Rico to suspend payments on the debt. We think that this should have been done much before. But as you say, we have to address this immediate debt question. But the deeper issue is the fact that the economy of Puerto Rico doesn't work. It hasn't grown. The economy of Puerto Rico has been in a situation of stagnation for the last 11 years. It hasn't grown in terms of income. It hasn't grown in terms of employment. It has lost, in fact, about a fifth of the jobs that existed in 2006 don't exist anymore. That's about 250,000 jobs that disappeared. Helps explain why many people are moving to the United States, because they just can't find jobs here in Puerto Rico. So you could even conceivably fix the debt issue, you know, in a short term. But if the economy of Puerto Rico doesn't start growing, then you're going to be back in a very critical situation very soon. What has to be looked into is changing, abandoning this notion that the development of Puerto Rico is going to keep depending exclusively on the attraction of U.S. corporations that would invest in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico has been trapped for many decades now in a vicious circle in which the island doesn't have capital to develop, so we attract U.S. corporations to come to Puerto Rico by offering to not charge them any taxes or very little taxes. They come to Puerto Rico, some of them do. They invest, they generate profits, but the profits are not reinvested in Puerto Rico. They leave the island. Therefore, the island doesn't have any capital. Therefore, it has to attract U.S. corporations and so on. It's a never-ending process of dependency on external investment, which not even in the best of cases was it able to generate sufficient employment for the island population. Right now, the unemployment rate in Puerto Rico is about 12%, the official unemployment rate. The labor participation rate is about 40%. In the United States, I think it's about 65 or something like that. That means that 60% of the people are working in working age are not even looking for a job. I mean, they have given up looking for a job because they know they won't find one. Out of those who are active in the labor force, 12% don't find a job. So when it comes down, you know, you have 30% of the population actually able to find a job. It's an economic structure that doesn't function, even though it generates, as I said, considerable amount of profits for a small group of very large corporations, basically U.S. multinationals. So that whole economic structure has to be transformed. And unfortunately, we don't see in the initiatives that you see in Congress any significant moves towards in that direction in terms of questioning and enabling Puerto Rico to develop and to acquire an actually functioning economy, which is what it lacks at present.
Professor, the debt crisis is also a flesh and blood situation in Puerto Rico. You've spoken a little bit about this, but I was hoping you could flesh out further. What are the dilemmas now faced by the Puerto Rican people and the specific issues for the island's people, such as whether people in a village in Puerto Rico will even be able to get clean water?
The situation now is very critical. The government, up till now, even though the government proclaimed, admitted back in June of 2015 that the debt, as the governor said at that moment, is unpayable. It cannot be paid. He has continued paying it, by and large. What that means is that it has been paid at the cost of increasing cuts in all sorts of government services, or not paying providers of different services. I'll give you a few examples. Last week, many school children were not able to go to school because the government had not paid and has not paid the people who operate the bus systems that take the children to school. So there are no buses for the children to go to school. In the same fashion, there are many students in Puerto Rico in the public school system which are what we call special education students, students that need particular teachers that deal with certain, you know, problems or situations that they have. These providers of special education have not been paid either. Many of them have been working without being paid for the longest time, and some of them have stopped working as a result of not being paid. They have trying to make a living in another fashion. So special education students are also suffering because of this situation. In the same fashion, there are unemployed people in Puerto Rico who receive a check, you know, support while they are unemployed from the government of Puerto Rico for a certain period of time. That has been, as you say, frozen at present. The payments that were due last week were not carried out because the government doesn't have any money to do it. In the case of the University of Puerto Rico, where I work, the budgetary assignations that the university receives every month in order to operate have also been cut or have not been paid at some point or another. So the budget of the university is also suffering as a result of this situation. The fact is that over the last 3 years, the government has, its priority has been to pay as much of the debt as possible at the expense of these and many other services that I have, as the ones that I have mentioned, which is, I think, the wrong priority. I think we think that 3 years ago, it was foreseeable that the government of Puerto Rico was going to reach a situation of not being able to pay the debt. And at that moment, 3 years ago, the government of Puerto Rico should have said this debt is unpayable, it's unsustainable, and we are going to suspend payment. And we demand of Congress that immediate action be taken in order to avoid a major crisis, which is what, you know, we are living now. This is what we should have tried to avoid, the critical situation. Now, the government, which up to now has done everything possible to pay the service of the debt, even that this government has been forced to admit that, no, we cannot keep paying. We have to stop payment. That's why they approved the moratorium law, which allows the governor to suspend payments if necessary, which is probably going to be the case very soon unless Congress acts on this legislation that is now under consideration, in which case the whole framework of the situation in Puerto Rico may change from one day to the next. We will have to see what happens.
Professor Bernabe, one of the most virulent group of bondholders is the hedge funds and the vulture funds.
Yes.
Who hold anywhere from 30 to 40% of the debt, and they want their money now and couldn't give a damn whether people are starving in Puerto Rico. Why don't you talk about them and their policies? Who are they, and should they be recompensed for the entire face value of the debt in any case?
Yeah. This is one aspect of the Puerto Rican situation, which is still, some of it is still in the shadows. It's one of the reasons why we insist. One of the things the government has to organize, should have organized long ago, but must be organized now, is an audit of the debt. One of the things that such an audit of the debt would reveal is exactly who owns Puerto Rico's debt right now. Because, as you point out, over the last 2 years, as the fiscal situation in Puerto Rico worsened, many of the bondholders who had bought these bonds when they were issued at first have sold them in what they call the secondary market to other bondholders. Many of these bonds, we don't know exactly how many, have been acquired by so-called hedge funds or vulture funds, which operate in this fashion. That is, what they do is they buy bonds at a discount of countries or municipalities that are in financial trouble, and bondholders are happy or willing to or eager to sell these bonds, and they're willing to sell them at a lower price than they bought them. They sell them at a discount, and the hedge funds buy them at a discount, and then they will do everything possible to get paid 100% value on these bonds, and they will therefore have a tremendous profit. This is the way they operate. They take advantage of the weak. That's why they're called vulture funds. This is what they did in Argentina. This is what they have done in many places. And they have been operating, as you say, in Puerto Rico. And they have financed some studies which, you know, as you say, propose that Puerto Rico cut education services, cut health services, fire government employees, and so on and so forth. All sorts of cuts to be able to pay for this debt. It should be pointed out that to add a further loop to this situation is the fact that the government of Puerto Rico has approved over the last few years legislation that invites some of these large investors to move to Puerto Rico. The way they do that is, again, to offer them tax exemption. They would have no taxes in Puerto Rico. So some of these hedge fund managers, such as John Paulson is the most notorious case, have moved to Puerto Rico. And they operate from here at least part of the year. And they have been acquiring major properties in Puerto Rico, major hotels and so on and so forth, resorts and so on. So you see a wave of takeovers by these funds of important economic activities in Puerto Rico. So, yes, this is part of the situation that we are confronting, the growing presence of these hedge funds and their very aggressive policies demanding payment under investment and their unwillingness to consider the possibility of some sort of renegotiation of the debt.
I recently went to a lecture on the debt in Puerto Rico, and there are a number of legal scholars. One of them was Nelson Torres Rios, who is an attorney and professor at Hostos Community College. And one of the things that he pointed out, he cited to a Supreme Court case. And it said that a provision in the Constitution that municipal corporations shall not become indebted in any manner nor for any purpose to an amount that exceeds its limit therein forbids implied as well as express indebtedness, and it is binding on a court of equity as well as on a court of law. In other words, the court is clearly saying that an ultra-virus transaction cannot be upheld by the court. So the conclusion there was, and actually something similar was used in Detroit by Judge Rose, that in fact Detroit's debt was obtained illegally as such, and that Detroit only had to pay a fraction of the debt as a result. I mean, there were also issues that were raised about international human rights principles that challenged the enforceability of odious debt. So I'm wondering if there is some consideration of these kinds of issues as a way of not paying back these debts, which there are those who would suggest are illegal to begin with.
Absolutely. This is one of the reasons why we insist on the need for an audit of the debt. Even before you renegotiate the debt, you should make sure that only debt which is legal should be paid. We should make sure that we are not renegotiating debt that should not be paid to begin with. And there are very good reasons to suspect that there are probably important portions of the debt of Puerto Rico which is illegal or unconstitutional. For example, as you mentioned, the Constitution forbids the Puerto Rican government the service of the debt of Puerto Rico to be higher than 15% of the revenue of the government of Puerto Rico. And over the years, the government of Puerto Rico managed to devise several mechanisms to go around that disposition, to violate that disposition. So to begin with, there's probably much of this debt which was issued in violation of the Constitution, and that would certainly be grounds for annulling some of these debts. In the same fashion, recently it was revealed how some of the debt of the Puerto Rico Electrical Company, which is a public corporation, it's debt that was issued under the advice of financial advisors who evidently, it seems, knew that this debt could not be paid, that there were no funds to pay for this debt, yet they advised that the government of Puerto Rico issue this debt. And there were all sorts of mechanisms in order to disguise the unpayability of this debt and so on and so forth. So we think that an audit of the debt would reveal portions of the debt of Puerto Rico that are illegal or that were adopted violating existing rules, that they are corrupt, and that they are... And as you mentioned, I think there's beyond that, there's a very strong argument that, as I said, the debt is unsustainable in terms of, in human terms. That is to say, as you know, the legal principle is that contracts have to be enforced. But there's also a legal principle which says that a contract that the enforcing of which would imply a violation of human rights and a violation of human dignity cannot be enforced. And there's a very good argument that for Puerto Rico to pay its present debt as it was originally contracted would imply such a violation of human rights.
I just wanted to add to that. I thought it was interesting that it's an international law principle that's been around for centuries and may have played a part in the U.S. position not to incur the debt of Puerto Rico or Cuba after the Spanish-American War. And we should mention that U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders is on record in demanding that if any debt was issued to creditors in violation of Puerto Rico's constitution, that it must be immediately set aside.
Yes, Senator Sanders has taken a very forceful stand in favor of an audit of the debt, which I think is correct. And as you mentioned, that if such an audit would reveal that some parts of the debt are illegal or unconstitutional, it should not be paid. He has also taken a stand against further austerity measures in Puerto Rico in order to pay for this unsustainable debt, which we also agree with. So we think that's the direction in which we should go. I mean, I would hope that there would be other congressmen that would have the position of Senator Sanders. Unfortunately, that's not the case.
And
most of them do not
have
that approach.
The minute we have left, what has Hillary Clinton, Candidate Clinton, been saying?
She has a far more timid view of the situation in Puerto Rico. I would say that largely her position has been that Puerto Rico should be granted the power to declare bankruptcy under Chapter 9 of the U.S. Bankruptcy Code. Puerto Rico finds itself in a very strange situation because municipalities in the U.S. and U.S. Public corporations, you know, like the city of Detroit, for example, can declare bankruptcy, can go to bankruptcy court under Chapter 9 of the U.S. bankruptcy law. And that is a framework which works, you know, may or may not work depending on how you work with it, but it is a framework for renegotiating the debt in a way. Puerto Rico cannot use Chapter 9. It's not extended to Puerto Rico, so it doesn't have this framework for renegotiating the debt in an organized way. And so she has been in favor of extending Chapter 9 to Puerto Rico so that it would be able to renegotiate its debt, so to speak, within that framework. that has been the center of her position, which is a demand that the government of Puerto Rico has formulated. So she kind of supports this demand of the government of Puerto Rico.
Finally, I must say that while we're concerned about Senator Sanders and Senator Clinton on these issues, your own position, is it pretty much that there must be an audit, or are there other planks to the platform as to the fiscal development of the island in the time to come?
Well, on the short and medium term, I think we have to, as you mentioned, we have to suspend payment on this debt. We cannot keep paying this debt. This is going to bring about major legal battles, and we should have to, you know, we will face them. I think we have to demand from Congress that it approve legislation that protects Puerto Rico against litigation from the creditors when they do suspend payments, you know, some sort of stay on legal actions against the government of Puerto Rico. That would be a good thing. I think we should demand that. We should have an audit of the debt in order to find out what part of the debt is legitimate and which part of it is not legitimate. I think we have to mobilize in Puerto Rico, and we have to mobilize in the United States, in the White House, in Congress, in front of the federal courts if necessary, in front of the offices of the major creditors, in order to demand that Puerto Rico be allowed to reconstruct its economy. I think that the government of Puerto Rico has to revise its tax policies. As I said, there's $35 billion in profits that leave the island every year, and they tax, at best, they pay a tax of about 3 or 4% on those profits. That has to be reevaluated. They have to pay a little bit more tax in Puerto Rico, particularly in the present situation. So there are many things that have to be done in order to reconstruct Puerto Rico's economy. What the road should not be is to keep imposing austerity measures on the Puerto Rican people in order to pay for a debt which is unsustainable, that will only increase poverty and injustice in Puerto Rico, and it's going to perpetuate the crisis. It's not going to bring Puerto Rico out of the crisis.
And we'd like to thank Professor Barnabe for setting the record straight on this most important issue. And we've been speaking with candidate for governor of Puerto Rico, Professor Rafael Barnabe. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.